is Cabernet and True Crime, the place where good wine and true crime come together. What is up? I'm feeling like just real, real amped up today, and I don't know what the deal is. I've had only one cup of coffee, but I'm just like jacked. I don't know. Hopefully I can reel it in and get through this. I also sat down and I forgot what I was doing for a second, so I wasted quite a bit of time trying to remember what I was recording today. So I kind of have like a little bit of a, not even like a lisp, I had dental work done and they actually just completely yanked one of my teeth out and put a screw into my head so I could get an implant done. And I'm not exactly used to talking with it yet. And that's a whole, I will go into detail on my interesting experience with that in the True Crime Tuesday episode that's coming out on Tuesday. But for now, let's keep it short, sweet, to the point, because this is a serial killer short. Today is Sunday. It is the day of the week that I briefly go over a crime that I thought was good enough to do in like 10 to 15 minutes, you know, instead of beating a dead horse and drawing this out to a 45 minute episode, which is always what I strive to do. This one's going to be a short one. Beep, boop, beep. This one, though, actually, I will do a sidebar. There will be a True Crime Tuesday coming out later this month, which me researching this one inspired because I went down a weird rabbit hole, but it didn't go with this, so it went with a different thing. That was a little bit of an overshare, and I've already wasted 2 minutes of your day. Let's get into it. Okay, so today we are going to be talking about Ruth Ellis. She was a British model and a nightclub hostess. She was a bombshell, beautiful, and blonde. And she actually was gorgeous. And if you were on the Instagram to find this, or if you want to check out the Instagram after listening to this, she will be the picture for today. Gorgeous, beautiful woman. So she was born as Ruth Neilson on October 9th, 1926 in Ryle, Wales. She was the fifth of six children. When she was a child, she moved from Ryle to Basingstoke in Hampshire. I have no idea where any of these places are, so if you do, good on you. Her mother was a Belgian refugee and her father was a cellist from Manchester, England. She lived a normal childhood, attending Fairfield Senior Girls School, but left when she was 14 to work as a waitress. In 1941, the Neilsons packed up and moved to London. In 1944, 17-year-old Ruth became pregnant by a Canadian soldier and gave birth to a son, whom she named Claire Andrea Neilson, nicknamed Andy. The father sent money for a year, but payments ceased shortly after. Andy eventually went to live with his grandmother, who was Ruth's mom. Ruth became a nightclub hostess through nude modeling work, which paid lucratively. A man named Morris Conley, who was a manager at the Court Club on Duke Street, was known to blackmail his hostess employees into sleeping with him. In 1950, Ruth became pregnant by one of her regular customers since she had turned to sex working for money. She illegally terminated the pregnancy in the third month and returned to work nearly immediately. On November 9th, 1950, she married 41-year-old George Johnson Ellis. She was 24. He was a divorced dentist with two sons. They basically had a courthouse wedding. He had been one of her customers at Court Club, where she was still a hostess. He was allegedly a violent alcoholic, jealous, possessive, and the marriage fell apart quickly because he was convinced that Ruth was having an affair. Ruth left him numerous times, but she always came back. In 1951, Ruth was 4 months pregnant. She was a beauty queen in the film Lady Godiva Rises Again, although her role was uncredited. And I've never actually seen that movie, but apparently she's in there. After her role, she gave birth to a daughter named Georgina, but George refused that he was the parent, and the couple eventually divorced. Ruth and her daughter returned to Ruth's parents' house, where Ruth left both of her children and returned to sex work to make ends meet. So she dropped off both of her children with her grandparents and went out and was trying to make a living. In 1953, Ruth became the manager of a nightclub in Knightsbridge. She met several famous clients and was showered with lavish gifts and expensive presents. This is where Ruth meets a man named David Blakely. David was a race car driver. He was a famous race car driver, apparently. Shortly after the meeting, he moved in with Ruth to the flat above the club she managed. And even though he was engaged to another woman, so Ruth became pregnant with David's child, but she had an abortion. The relationship was one-sided. David Blakely was much more attached to Ruth than she was to him. We know this because she began seeing a man named Desmond Cusson. He was a bomber pilot during World War II, but he left in 1946 to become an accountant. Ruth eventually lost her job, but began working for Desmond and his family's tobacco business. Although she was dating and working for Desmond, Ruth was still having a relationship with David Blakely. They had an open relationship. I use air quotes for that because it's not determined whether that was consensual or not. They just had an open relationship. Blakely was becoming violent and bitter. He offered to marry Ruth and she agreed. In January 1955, Ruth lost her fifth pregnancy because she had been punched in the stomach by David during an argument. On Easter Sunday, which was April 10th, 1955, Ruth takes a taxi from Desmond's home to a flat in Hampstead. A couple lived there, but she suspected that David was there, like, hanging out with that couple. When she got there, Blakely's car drove away, so she paid her driver and walked to a bar called Magdala, where she found David's car outside. I'm assuming she knew he was going there. At 9:30 p.m., David and his friend left the bar, walking right past Ruth and ignoring her. She shouted his name, and he still ignored her, so she pulled out a .38 caliber Smith & Wesson revolver from her handbag and fired 5 shots at David. The first shot missed, and he began to run, so she rounded the car and shot him once. David Blakely fell to the ground, where Ruth stood over him and fired 3 more shots. One of the shots was so close, it left powder burns on his skin. Bystanders said that Ruth had gone into a trance-like state, standing over David's body, trying to fire the 6th shot, but she, at the last second, shot it into the ground, and the ricochet actually hurt a bystander. I think they were ultimately okay, but they did get hit by either concrete or the ricocheted bullet. Ruth Ellis was calm and was arrested by an off-duty policeman. He took the gun from her, put it into his jacket. Ruth told him, and this is a direct quote, "I'm guilty, I'm a little confused." She was calm and not obviously under the influence, and she made a detailed confession and was charged with murder. Police interrogated Ruth. She was examined by several people and had several medical tests, but it was determined that she was completely sane and normal. Ruth Ellis's trial started on June 20th, 1955. She appeared so she actually looked stunning at her trial. She appeared in a sharp black suit and silk blouse with freshly bleached and styled hair, which apparently her defense attorneys were like, do not, like, you've seen the movies where they want this, they don't want their client, if she's a female for a murder trial, to look hot. Like, you're not supposed to look good. You want to look demure and quiet and sweet, you know, like cardigan, a pearl necklace. But Ruth was like, no, I'm going all out. If I'm going to go on murder trial, I want to look good. And she did. She looked great. So the prosecution only asked her one question, and that was, when you fired the revolver at close range into the body of David Blakely, what did you intend to do? And the only response she offered was, quote, "It's obvious when I shot him, I intended to kill him." Her reply, which was an obvious public confession, secured a guilty verdict and therefore a mandatory death sentence. The jury deliberated for only 20 minutes. Ruth's mother wanted to petition the death penalty, but Ruth refused. She didn't want to escape it and made sure her legal counsel didn't interfere with her wishes. So she knew by doing her confession she was going to get the death penalty, and she didn't want anybody to get in the way of her getting the death penalty. Like, she wanted... that's what she wanted. The day before her death was scheduled, lawyers met with her to get the will sorted, and they wanted to know the full story of why she did it. She complied and told them, but only if they promised they wouldn't use the information to get her saved from the death penalty. So they said, we'll tell you why we did it, cool beans, but I still want to get the death penalty. Ruth told them that she had been drinking with Desmond for most of the weekend. He had given her the gun for shooting practice. Desmond was also the one who drove her to the murder scene, not a taxi. Her lawyer, who technically never promised to keep her story a secret, went to the police to try and sway their decision, but it had no effect, and honestly, it made Ruth look more guilty because now it was no longer a crime of passion. It was considered premeditated. She'd gotten the gun, she'd driven there. It wasn't like a coincidence that she shot him because he ignored her. Like, she intended to kill him. So, that never happened. I mean, it happened, but nothing came from that. It was just, she was going to still be scheduled to be killed the next day. From jail, Ruth wrote a letter to David Blakely's parents, and she said, "I have always loved your son, and I shall die still loving him." The day before her execution, she was weighed, and the hanging drop was set, which I never knew that. I guess that makes sense, but I never knew that when a person was hanged, they weighed the person and then had, like, calculated out the distance for how far they were supposed to. I mean, I guess that makes sense, but I never thought there was, like, a calculation to it. So, at 9 a.m. on July 13th, 1955, she was hanged. She was executed in under 12 seconds, and her body was left to hang there for an hour. After Ruth's death, England's opinion on the death penalty, for women or otherwise, was greatly changed. 10 years later, it was abolished in Britain. Ruth's husband, George, became an alcoholic and hung himself on August 2nd, 1958. In 1969, Ruth's mother was found unconscious in a gas-filled room in her apartment, a possible suicide attempt. She never fully recovered and never spoke coherently again. Andy, Ruth's son, was only 10 when his mother was hanged. He took his own life in 1982 essentially an Airbnb right after desecrating his mother's grave. Georgina was only 3 when her mother was hanged and 6 when her father killed himself. She was put into foster care and lived what we could assume to be a normal life because nothing was ever heard about it. But she died from cancer at the age of 50. So Ruth Ellis, I mean, I don't want to say her actions kind of caused her family to spiral out of control, but I feel like her actions kind of caused her family to spiral out of control, but I guess you never know what people would do even without that circumstance. So, that is the story of Ruth Ellis, a wild one, and I think you'll see when the one episode comes out why I was inspired by this case to cover the next one. I'm really excited for it. I almost wanted to move it up in the schedule, but I'm not fully done researching yet, so I can't. Because I would love to cover it on for Tuesday, but I can't. So if you don't, follow me on Cabernet and True Crime. I have an Instagram. Everything's under the handle Cabernet and True Crime. I also have a Patreon account, so if you sign up to be a patron,
it doesn't look like you have an app named Instagram. Ooh. If you'd like, I can.
Shut up. Sorry, my Apple my Apple Watch decided to chime in. Siri, shut up. I have a Patreon account. There's 10 patron episodes, I think, now. If not, that's close, I think. I also have a YouTube channel, which I plan on. This may be the last podcast version of Serial Killer Shorts. I may be returning back to YouTube. I'm not sure. Let's see how editing this patron exclusive episode goes before I start saying anything. And with that, this was your Serial Killer Sunday short. She's not a serial killer, but you know the gist. And I hope you all have a great weekend. Well, I guess it's over. It's Sunday, but I'll see you for Tuesday. How about that? Thank you.